Welcome to DLSN, a podcast brought to you by McGuire Woods. DLSN promotes the advancement of women in private equity and finance through conversations with women in the private equity and finance space. These conversations provide both insights and practical takeaways to inform your deal work and enhance the culture of your organization. If you're ready to drive the industry toward a more inclusive and diverse environment, then it's time to come to the table.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the DLSN podcast hosted by McGuire Woods, Women in Private Equity and Finance Group. I'm Kelsey Hitchcock, and today I'm joined by Laura Redinger, Principal at Foundation Investment Partners. Hey, Laura.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well this morning.
Good. So tell me a bit about yourself.
Well, today's my birthday. How about that? So I will not tell you what number birthday it is, but today's my birthday. So
very, very happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Taking time out of your birthday to record a podcast with me. I appreciate it.
Just a little bit about me. I've been married for over 25 years, and we have three beautiful, now adult boys, almost adult boys. Two are in college, one's in high school. And, you know, I've for 30 some years really tried to enjoy that and then figure out how to deal with this thing called a career. I think I've done pretty much okay on that with some peaks and valleys. And I think I'm very fortunate that I've had some broad, wide experiences in my career. I started out in accounting and hated that. No offense to my accounting friends. And then I spent, you know, 20 plus years in banking, mostly in capital markets, lending money to private equity firms for M&A transactions. And now I find myself in my most recent role at Foundation Investment Partners, doing everything from business development to transaction execution. And now with the closing of our recent platform 3 weeks ago, helping to manage an investment. So it's been a great run so far. And I think every year I've continued to grow and learn with the support of my family.
That's wonderful. What's it like raising three boys?
Our house is chaos. Although not as much anymore with two of them at college and the one who's home, not home very often. But, you know, we were, like many others, busy with sports and activities and constantly short on time and having to lean on other folks, you know, to really help raise them, whether it was our family or friends or early childhood programs, drop-off programs at school. We've done it all and we figured out how to make it work. And I don't think I've ruined them in any shape or form. So that's a positive.
That's the best expectation I think you can have. I having no kids myself, I don't even know where to begin with that. But and my husband and I are about 1.5 years into our marriage. So congratulations on 25 years. That's incredible.
Thank you.
So what attracted you to the private equity and finance space? And also what made you make that transition from accounting to banking and finally landing at Foundation?
Sure. Well, really, I fell into it. So I think I mentioned earlier that I started my career in public accounting and I really wasn't the spot for me. It was a great foundation, but I really needed to have more people interaction. And so after my short stint at Ernst & Young, I joined KeyBank here in Cleveland, and that really opened my eyes to the private equity world early in my career. You know, initially it was performing ABL field exams and then working my way into underwriting and then portfolio management. And so back then, which is quite a few years ago, you know, we didn't have specialized groups. They were really just starting to come on. So I got the benefit of being able to learn lending in all those different segments. And then eventually, as you know, I advanced into the portfolio management role, There was specialization starting for ABL, private equity, / cash flow enterprise loans. And so I really started focusing in on working with private equity. And so from there, I got my feet wet and moved into syndication. So that's where I spent a good amount of time on the capital market side in syndication. So going out and raising money for larger private equity-based opportunities, M&A transactions. And I think, you know, really, I made the transition over the last couple of years, largely because working for large organizations at some level can be its own challenge. And I think I was ready for a more entrepreneurial role. And, you know, as a working mom, it's really hard to find that opportunity in a larger private equity firm. Or I should say, it's hard to find a good working balance. And Foundation offered me the opportunity to still do the work that I wanted to do, be a little more entrepreneurial. And then given that we're a smaller firm and we are not a volume shop, it gave me the opportunity to really make the transition from commercial banking, capital markets into, you know, the investment side. I think the other really important thing is David Wood, our managing member and founder, he and I crossed paths early in our years at KeyBank. So I had always kept in touch with him, and he started FIP 12 or 13 years ago and was looking to grow. And so that really helped provide me the opportunity.
That's really interesting. I mean, obviously I'm a fan of Foundation, but having those relationships early on in your careers and people kind of weaving their way through your life, it's just, it's interesting how that can happen and how those connections can come up later and be an opportunity to work together again. That makes sense. I'm going to reframe this question to 25 years ago. We typically ask, what was the culture like 10 years ago for women in your space? But I'd like to know what it was like 25 years ago or 30 years ago.
That is quite fine. I'm comfortable with my gray hair. Yeah, it was really different. You know, there weren't many women at all early on in my career, but I was lucky to have early a couple of great mentors, you know, male mentors that really took me under their wing to help me learn and grow. And so that was fabulous. You know, but I think COVID really has helped change the work day, the work dynamic. You know, if I think back when I was having my babies, you know, work from home wasn't a thing. I actually worked 4 days a week at one point as a portfolio manager, but was consistently told that I did the same amount of work, if not more, than my full-time colleagues. So that didn't last very long because I knew I wasn't getting paid the same amount. So there just were a lot of things that I think, you know, 25 years later, COVID's definitely helped work from home. And then I think also the other dynamic of young couples, both the female and male, you know, husband and wife are both taking care of children. And quite honestly, that shifted a bit from when, you know, a lot of my male colleagues at the time had, you know, wives, moms that stayed at home. So that's been a little bit of a shift as well, too. And, you know, for the better, I'm certain of it, for the better.
Yeah, I think as people have examples, you know, in their lives of women other than as caretakers, women colleagues, female, you know, wives or spouses or partners that work, it changes their perspective on how, or it might just inform their perspective more about just women as people, women as producers, instead of just as in that caretaking role. I mean, you know, personally, right? You are in a caretaking role. You also are in a producer role. You know, those things go hand in hand. You're wearing both hats probably all day long, but it's nice to, the people can, I think that the path for women is broadening and has been broadening for quite some time, even from when I started a decade ago, and it's good to see. What do you think is the biggest challenge facing women entrepreneurs? And what advice do you have to overcome that?
So I think a challenge facing women entrepreneurs and women professionals is often strong personalities have a negative connotation compared to their male counterparts. And I recall syndications days of my career where I was working on an M&A PE opportunity that was difficult. And I was being probably aggressive in my approach to try to help get, you know, favorable terms for our client. And that was conceived as negative. And I actually got fired from that client, which was horrible. I mean, I felt awful. I'd never until that point had that experience. And I think when the dust settled and I was able to talk to the other people on the key team who had direct, you know, relationship responsibility for the PE client, my aggressiveness or pushiness was viewed negatively. So I think we have to be careful. And I certainly didn't do that again. We just have to be careful with how we're viewed as we try to work, you know, work an angle, work a transaction hard, work a negotiation hard. So I think you just have to be very aware of your audience and find that balance and that fine line of pushing but not pushing too hard. And yeah, it could be challenging. I find it less so now. I think it's probably more of a confidence issue. I probably have more confidence now than I did back then, so I can finesse it a little better than I used to be able to.
I think that's so true. And it's all different personalities. When you're working on a deal, you have upwards 10 to maybe 20 people involved or more. And everyone comes with their own baggage and their own history and their own interpretation of what people are saying and how they're saying it. And so much can get lost in translation over email, especially, let alone just speaking on the phone and something is misheard or misunderstood. So I think for everyone, really, so much of deal work is managing personalities and it requires you to possess some emotional intelligence in how you're approaching people and how they're going to react best. You know, the example I always like to use is if there's like an opposing counsel and maybe they're not understanding the issue the same way that I think they should, having that conversation in front of an audience, like you said, you know, thinking about your audience versus in front of our clients, rather than having that conversation as a sidebar, the sidebar is going to go a lot better. You know, but there's so much to be conscious of. And I feel like it's even more relevant oftentimes for women, just because of we're dealing in a still very male-dominated field, and there are a lot of stereotypes that go along with that. So how you approach people, I think it's, as you said, a lot different now than it was, say, 30, 20, 10 years ago. But, you know, I think for everyone, you need to be cognizant of that. And, you know, women especially, just because of people can misinterpret pretty easily or read into things. That's such a critical skill to possess and to hone. Laura, have you seen any successful strategies or initiatives implemented within organizations that you've been a part of to address, or in other organizations to address and mitigate gender bias in private equity?
One thing that's been more prevalent, you know, maybe in the second decade of my career, was really having good, strong mentorship programs. So I think there weren't always a lot of females to be leading those mentorship programs. But what I think was also helpful was having mentorship of women by the male executives. And I think, you know, if you have that example of people that are trying to help bring you along, help teach you, help guide you, help build your network with their network, that also is helping you really to get the buy-in And so I mentioned it earlier. I had some really good people early on in my career where they were the, senior folks on the team, and they took me under their wing. And, I worked really hard for them. But I think as I started to progress in my career and have opportunities to do more work, larger deals, larger financings, having folks from a mentorship perspective to be able to go talk to about difficult situations, whether it was a deal item or an interpersonal. Here, an example here is, I can recall having a late night, like midnight phone call with a client, and I actually had a sick baby, and that baby wouldn't come off of my shoulder doing the phone call from home. And we got through the call. It was a little painful, but I took some flack for the whole conference call being able to hear my child that was sick. And, I really leaned on my mentors to help me figure out how to manage that, right? I was, certainly disappointed. And they really helped me figure out how to go back to that individual and not make it an emotional discussion, right? But to frame it in the way that my work was done, it was done really well, and no one else seemed to be bothered, with a potential disruption on the phone call. So that was really a tough spot because, I was in a no-win situation, quite honestly. But again, circling back, that mentorship, both from females and males, I think diversity is important. It's important to have a strong network, not just of women, other women professionals, but also of other male professionals to help you along the way.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I mean, most of my mentors have been men, but there's certainly a lot of strong women in our organization too. And I've been lucky to have both male and female mentors. But that ability to rely on someone to navigate issues, and it's so critical, because there's so many times in your career where you feel like you're at a this is an emergency, or this is such a critical place, or such a critical opportunity or question or occurrence. I need to make sure I'm handling it the appropriate way, and having a guide through that is really invaluable. And I think people, you always hear that mentorship is important, and you try to be a resource to people that are junior to you. But when you get into those critical conversations, like the one you just mentioned, having someone there by your side that knows you, that knows your work, that you've built trust with over time, because I love the saying, trust is consistency over time, that knows who you are and your character, is so important. But yeah, I agree 100%. That's just so wild, because I feel like, and part of it was through the pandemic. I can't tell you how many calls I've been on where one of my colleagues has had a baby crying in the background, or a child screaming, a toddler screaming, or whatever it is, because we're all, and part of that's working from home more. You hear people's lives in the background, and that's their life, right? This is work. And it's just such a different attitude to think that for someone to be offended by or take it the wrong way of you having your life outside of the office, and them hearing that in the background, right? It's not like you were at a bar and you should have been at home working. You had a sick baby on your shoulder. That's just that's so wild. And I think, I don't know if I go through the day without having a conversation where I can at least hear someone's child in the background, especially if we're working on nights, or it's bath time, or it's, the clock never stops at private equity. So of course you're gonna have hear people's children in the background. Anyway, what an experience. I mean, and what a full 180 degree turn experiencing that now must be for you with your kids being older and hearing people's children in the background as you experienced going through COVID and the work from home, a lot more work from home, people working from home now. What advice do you have for other women aspiring to leadership roles in private equity, particularly those facing gender-related obstacles in their career advancement?
So I think this one really hit home for me over the last couple of years while at Foundation. David is a big proponent of utilizing an assessment tool called Colby. And this certainly isn't a plug, but it's been a favorable experience. A sidebar is, being with large organizations, a lot of times you have, soup du jour, all kinds of different consulting things that come in and out, and it always felt like there was one after the other and you weren't getting a consistent flavor. But here at Foundation, we use this tool called Colby, and it really is an assessment to see how you like to work, what type of team player you are. And there have been a couple of aha moments because, we're a small team and it's really important to have different viewpoints and different ways of working. Some of us are more detailed, some of us like facts. Some are creative, some really like the white paper of trying to come up with a solution. And so, what I really think is important, particularly in this role in private equity, is making sure you really understand the different personalities and folks on the team. Now, obviously, you might not be able to give everybody a Colby assessment, but I think being aware of how different people react and behave and starting with the communication will really help you better understand and be a better team player. And I think not everybody likes to do it the way you do it, right? So your way might just be the best way for you, but if you can have a better awareness of how people on the team or people at the client, how they like to be communicated to, or even as simple as you could tell when someone's fresher in the first half of the day or the second day, or but really, really having that, I guess you said it earlier, Kelsey, that emotional intelligence of thinking about it versus just doing the work. I mean, so often we're just so busy and we're just doing the work. So taking a step back and really thinking about who your audience is and how you can figure out how to best communicate and interact with them. I don't think that's anything that I did early on in my career because I was just too focused of trying to get the work done so that I can leave and go take care of my kids and my husband or, whatever the case may be. But really stopping to try to better understand the environment that you're working in. I think that definitely has benefited me over the last couple of years.
I think that's so interesting. I just had an assessment too in January of like kind of personality. It wasn't Colby, but it was just like telling you different things about your leadership style and things like that. And there were some really eye-opening moments there. And I try to be really aware of how I'm interacting with others, but there were things there that were surprising to me. For instance, I always try to like tout people in front, like to say, so and so did such an excellent job, and copy the client or copy one of the CRAs or something on it to make sure that people are aware. And apparently not everyone likes that. There's other ways to give feedback rather than kind of shoving someone on a stage, almost the equivalent of that. But I want people to be aware of other people's achievements. I want to like shout their names, from the rooftop when they do something really, really great. So that was really a learning moment for me and thinking, okay, well, that's not the right way to approach this. How else can I give really positive feedback to someone and celebrate them and let other people know? And it might not be having all of those people on an email or on a call and letting everyone know while they're all present, right? Because that might not work for, some of our introverts or other personality types. So that was really eye-opening for me. But you see it all the time on deals that you can really, that personalities, you wouldn't think so, but personalities can 100% kill a deal. If you have someone industrial business or Midwest business or something, and you have people come in very aggressively, very, like very paper heavy, very, it's my way or the highway, they're not going to want to work together. You have to understand, as you've said multiple times in this podcast, Laura, your audience and how people want to receive information and how they're going to process information and how to approach people to explain your point without being jarring or risking the deal or risking relationships just to get your point across. That's, you have to be so cognizant of that. And it plays out so much in deal work. And you wouldn't think so, because it's so focused on numbers and EBITDA and you know, productivity and getting the deal to closing and things like that. But if you're running that fast, you know, you want to, even if it's across the table, you want to have a certain teamwork or team focused attitude to the people involved, and really understand your audience.
I want to add one more thing there, because I think a lot of times I find this, it takes a team. So when David and I, or one of our other partners, are, you know, looking at a new investment opportunity, I found it's a really good balance of personalities to bring to potential sellers. I think we started with this, right? My family, I've loved my career. It's been fabulous, but my family is my number one and always will be. And that's part of me. And so there's a lot of times when we're at, you know, management meetings or getting to know people where, you know, we might talk business, but I kind of want to get to know people. I want to get to know what excites them and why they're trying to sell their business. And a lot of times with these entrepreneurs, it's, you know, they're nearing retirement and they want to work hard and they want time and they want to be with their families. And so I think I've been able to make some really nice connections throughout that process, because I'm maybe just a little softer than some male colleagues. But again, having the balance in the room of a partner that is offsets you on that, you know, it really helps and can be powerful, so that you can really develop a very broad relationship with people. The last platform that we just closed, I found out since we closed that the seller was tough on his employees, you know, over the course of the last month or 6 weeks. But they all told me that he liked me and he was always really nice to me. But he was, you know, I heard he was really tough on those folks. So I'll take it when I can. And I think it works, just because I might not be as always, you know, down to business. You know, I try to talk to people a little bit more so about what's going on, broadly speaking. So I think that's benefited. And I think people should think about that as well in this broader deal community.
Yeah, I think that's so true. Because even the same person, you're not getting that same version of that person every day. Someone could be sick in their family. Someone could be, you know, they could have had some, they could be sick. They could have, there's so many different things. They could have a plumbing issue at their house. They could have a, there's just a million different things that could happen in someone's life that puts them off kilter or in a more annoyed or a different perspective in any day. And you don't know what any of those are unless you're talking to them. So the first question should always be, how are you doing? What's going on with you? Things like that. Cause you're so right about establishing that relationship and that rapport, because we go through our day doing so many different things, wearing so many different hats. And how often do we get asked, how are you doing? And we're not getting asked that question. A lot of other people aren't either. So, I mean, I think we do a good job on my teams. People have, you know, conversations about what's going on in their life, but I don't know that I would want to work in an environment where we weren't talking about how we're doing and about our lives, because you're right. Like, you know, our lives are what we do when we're not working in a way. Work is part of that, right? Like work is always there, but it's something that everyone's bringing to the table every day when they come to work, is all of the things that are going on outside of the office. I love a curmudgeon. I want to win over all the world, you know, it's like my life goal. I love that you were able to win over that principle. That's wonderful to hear. I guess right along those lines, what roles do you think networking plays in career progression for women in private equity? And do you have advice on building a strong professional network in the industry? I think we already started talking about this based on just talking about developing your relationships with people. But do you have any other advice, Laura?
I do. And I think I missed the mark on this one early in my career. And as I was thinking about this, I think part of that was really had to do with the fact that I was just so task focused. But, you know, I really just wanted to make sure I was getting the job done. And I always went to networking events, you know, locally, we have a really active ACG and, you know, there were other events. But now that I have a little more time to actually do this without robbing Peter to pay Paul. I just can't emphasize enough that if you can start building out your network earlier in your career, and I think that, you know, will help you kind of when you get 25 or 30 years in, like I have. And so that's why opportunities really to do this podcast, opportunities to be on panels. I've started to get a little more involved. Actually, not a little. I've started to get more involved with our local women in transaction group within ACG. And, you know, if I can now, you know, towards this part of my career, start helping some of the younger women, connecting them and helping to share my network, I get a good sense of pride of doing that now. So I think I was a late bloomer, but I'm very much enjoying this aspect of networking. A couple of good ideas in that vein are, and they're not mine, but I've been lucky to be included in them. So some of the local Cleveland private equity professionals, women professionals, host a dinner in Chicago, usually in early December, or, you know, the investment banking, our investment banking counterparts, female counterparts there. So, and it's really a good broad section of kind of junior and senior folks there to try to help with the younger crew, you know, give them access to people. So that's one example. And then another example is here in Cleveland, we generally, again, that same crew will do a dinner in the spring, really focused on some of the local colleges and, you know, trying to tap into the female students that might be interested in PE. So just hosting a dinner and just making sure that they get exposure to all of us. There's nothing I love when I get a call from a college student or an email from a college student that wants, you know, to pick my brain on the industry. And I mean, so I think, again, a little bit of it is function of time now that I'm, you know, have a little more because I don't have as many kids at home and not as needy, but I think those are just some examples of things that I've found to be beneficial over the last couple of years. Not only for me, just professionally helping people is great, but I think I just encourage everybody to get involved sooner in networking, even if they don't have a bunch of time, just try to make carve out a little bit of time for it.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I think that's true on both the networking front and on the mentorship front. You know, you could be like a fifth year attorney and you think, what can I offer someone that's, you know, in their first through fourth year of being an attorney in private equity or something like that. But I see so many of our mid-level and junior women mentoring, you know, whether it's people in college or people in law school or people that are more junior in their career here and taking that time. And it's just kind of at every stage of the corporate ladder, if you will, there's people that could benefit from kind of your experiences and what you've seen, even if it's just what you've seen so far. And certainly having people at the top of the ladder that have been doing this for decades is huge for anyone that has the opportunity to connect and to learn from that experience, like you, Laura. So that's just, I mean, I think mentorship, as we said at the beginning, is just so big, but also developing your network and through getting out there early on is so critical too. And there's a sometimes a confidence barrier there, but that's one of those things that I think as you do it more, you know, it's kind of like reaffirming and stabilizing so that you feel like more comfortable taking up space in a room as you do it more often. So if that's a barrier to anyone listening, I just take the first step and maybe go to an ACG event or go to a dinner or whatever, you know, the opportunity is, just take that leap and try it out. And you'd be surprised how your confidence can grow from just experience. There's no real way to build that confidence probably except for just doing it and having that experience. Laura, is there anything else that you want to share with our community today?
I would just share that if anybody, you know, wants to reach out, I always love, like I said, I'm trying to make more time for this. It really gives me the energy to be helpful, whether it's my network or just any thoughts on whether it's commercial banking or capital markets or, you know, my new private equity career of 3 years old. I'm always willing to help people. So please, I'm sure my contact information will be somewhere. I would love to hear from folks.
Laura, what advice would you give your younger, say, 22-year-old self?
So my advice to my 22-year-old self is that you have to get out and network, even if you know no one in a room, because here's the benefit of you going into a room that maybe now has 20% women, maybe 25% women, wear a bright color, and everybody is going to remember you because there's fewer of you than there are men in the room. And really, I think that's a huge benefit. A lot of times, you know, I found myself as not wanting to go to those types of events because you either didn't know anybody or you were intimidated because there were, you know, it was a room full of men. So go and wear something bright and people will remember you and that will benefit you along the way because they're going to remember when they see you at the next event. So that's my advice. Not really rocket science, but just some good practical blocking and tackling.
I love that. I love that. I think they call that serotonin, like clothing or dressing, where you wear a bright color that makes you happy. But yeah, I mean that's so memorable, and it also might change your attitude walking into that room. It might give you a little bit, if that gives you confidence, that's wonderful. And wear that color and go into that room. But you're so right about getting out there early on, and that people will remember because. Yeah, I would say it's like 20%, 20, 80, 20 maybe now. And that's like at a conference where we've really reached out to a lot of women, that you might see 20% women in the field. So that's wonderful. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Laura. I really appreciate it.
Happy to be involved. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's been really nice talking to you today.
Thank you for joining us at the table for this episode of DLSN. If you have a recommendation for an inspiring interviewee, a question you'd like us to ask, or topic you would like to hear covered, or if you'd like to tell us about women-focused initiatives in the field, please email us at wpef@mcguirewoods.com. We look forward to hearing from you. This podcast was recorded and is being made available by McGuire Woods for informational purposes only. By accessing this podcast, you acknowledge that McGuire Woods makes no warranty, guarantee, or representation as to the accuracy or sufficiency of the information featured in the podcast. The views, information, or opinions expressed during this podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily reflect those of McGuire Woods. This podcast should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice from a licensed professional attorney in your state and should not be construed as an offer to make or consider any investment or course of action.